sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends, though the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, hey, hey. 2021.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
You cannot talk!
Episode. Wow, we've come a mighty long way. This on Earth. When you make their point. Yo bitches, sexing me, take me to ecstasy. Once I nut, oh shit. I don't want them next to me. If it's on a motherfucker, believe I'm gonna ride. Excuse me. If it's on motherfucker, believe me, I'm gonna ride. I'm the type to swallow my blood for I swallow my pride.
Message!
Letters on my shirt read DKNY. Got grimy niggas. Running with me from BKNY. That's kind of fucked up poetry. But hey, welcome et bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, and a.k.a. Gaston Lebanon. Hardcore. Wow. Bring back my pig. All right. Power articulation, kids. All right, hey, before I continue with today's episode, let me rephrase that. Before I continue with today's awesome episode, I need to remind you listeners that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts. Therefore, it's protected by the red, the black, and the green. With the
red, black,
and the red, blue.
Rouge et bleu.
Rouge et bleu's up in this bitch. Rouge et bleu's up in this bitch. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and black folks who say yes to Big Rube's question,
are you an outcast?
This episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on Sunday, the Sabbath, October 6, 2024. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey has a staff, record label, and has a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be done with Whitey, then fuck you too. Fuck you too. This podcast may not be for you. All right. Bring back my pig. All right, okay, sorry. This is me just articulating my, I don't know if you've dealt with singers. This is just me exercising my, warming up my mouth. Yeah, kind of sounds a little creepy, but yeah. I think singers do that, so it's just so that I'm trying to practice articulation, all right? Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Where do I start? Yes, okay. One thing I like to do on this podcast is acknowledge all you returning listeners. And to that, I give you my salute. But I also need to acknowledge another very important group of individual listeners. And those of you who are returning listeners. Especially if you clicked on this podcast by mistake. You never know. You never know. All right. Okay. If I haven't scared you already, yes, talking to you listeners, welcome. At the same time, I'd just like to help you get familiarized with my podcast or my episodes, how I do things. So I like to break down my episodes into three parts which I prefer to call acts. Excuse me. Why acts? Because chicks dig it. Not the chicks that I know. Shut the fuck up. All right. The first act is the intro. Second act is news and random thought. And the last act is final thought. Now, in the first act, I introduced the podcast with the theme song, which you've heard already is the theme song, followed by the title of today's episode, mixed with greetings and salutation. Greetings and salutation and a disclaimer. Disclaimer on the heed the warning of the podcast you're about to embark to. The silliness, the offensiveness, it's kind of like, yeah, it's a disclaimer. You know what I mean? It's the, I wish I could tell you there'd be nudity on this podcast, but you wouldn't see it. All right. I'm silly. Right. So another thing I like to do in the intro is share some quotes. Start off the show, right? And, sorry. I forgot to mention theme song intro. Before the greetings, everything you heard before that was the title. After the title of today's episode, I recite some poetry, which somewhat will relate to my final thought. Now, I say this because, I'd like to share some intro and some quotes, and the last quote will be related to a final thought. Think of it as themes, all right? Think of it as a theme. But all right, okay, first quote goes, you're going to piss a lot of people off when you start doing what's best for you. Shout out to all you people pleasers in recovery. Second one goes, sometimes you have to eat your... Oh, no, sorry. Okay, the second one is an audio clip. And I won't be reciting it. I'm just going to play it for you. So, and here it goes.
If you overanalyze everything, you're a deep thinker. Deep thinkers constantly create scenarios in their minds, even when they know those scenarios aren't real. Reflection is their way of making sense of chaos. They look back because they know there's always something left to learn. Deep thinkers often wrestle with indecision, knowing that every choice feels like it could change everything. Their constant analysis can make them feel out of place, as if they're always one step removed from the moment. Deep conversations are where they feel most alive, and small talk leaves them drained. Mm-hmm. When others speak, they're already anticipating the layers behind the words. They pay attention to the little things that others don't notice. Daydreaming and contemplating life often fill their time.
All right, okay. And the last quote, shout out to all you deep thinkers out there. And the last quote goes like this. Sometimes you have to eat your words, chew your ego, swallow your pride, and accept that you are wrong. It's not giving up. It's called growing up. Oh, my God. Yo, this one deserves. simplereminders.com, but all these quotes that I just shared with you, they are all in the show notes with the links, so you can digest it yourself. With all that said, we are now ready. We are officially ready to get on with the second act. So high five to everyone. Shake your legs, and let's do this. Let's have fun. Let's have some fun. All right, let's go. No, let's make some history. Here we go. Go. Oh man, okay, I need to relax a bit. There is a joint sitting in the ashtray just waiting for me, just crying out my name, just calling me. All right, now, I think if I'm like this, it's because I'm recording later than usual. What is it? 8:50? It's going to be 9 soon. 9 p.m. And I would beat myself up, but the reason why I'm recording this late is because I wanted to make... I've been looking on the internet for making stir fry, and apparently it's really easy, right? So I just made myself some stir fry, and I started late because all the prep work and all that shit, but I started late doing it, and next thing you know, and it got to so late that I considered recording the next day, but I'm like, fuck it, I'm good. But my point is, I made motherfucking stir fry. On this podcast, I encourage you to celebrate your milestones, even the small ones. How did it taste? It was all right. You know, I mean, it was all right. I mean, you know, again, I was angry at myself because I kind of winged it. I've been watching a lot of videos. The way that they explained it, the constant theme is protein, aromatics, or whatever that is, like the garlic and shit like that. Aromatics, I think that's the word. And then your vegetables, and then sauce. My sauce was hella simple. It was just a soya sauce. And I don't know why I said it that way. But it was all right. It was all right. You know, I won't lie. A part of me feels... There's a debate going on within me. There's the part that doesn't want to, like, fuck a celebration, man. You should have been bitter. There's a part of me that says, that's like, that I didn't get it right the first shot. And then another one that's like, calm the fuck down. Show yourself some grace. This was your first time. You could only get better. But the point is, I mean, motherfucking stir fry. And the beauty in there is, okay, my nose is back to being stuffy. But I feel like the more vegetables I eat, it's a weird connection. I can't explain it, but my sinuses seem to clear up. I don't know if it's my sinus or if it's my allergies or whatever, but it's like I breathe better. Shout out to vegetables. And shout out to the farmers who picked the vegetables for me. Okay, yeah, but that was not on the agenda, but I needed to acknowledge the fact that I made motherfucking stir fry! Yay! And after this, I'm getting a cookie. All right, okay. First item on the agenda. this is going to be a follow-up to this next item. It's a follow-up to something I said on the last episode, and it was labeled... If you go on the agenda, it's labeled on the show notes, excuse me, it's labeled under the title, I'm Not Mad. And it was in response to, at the time I didn't know his name, but I looked it up. His name is Tony Dokupil. It's long English. And it was a response to a conversation interview that he did with Ta-Nehisi Coates, the man, the legend Ta-Nehisi Coates. First, let me start by saying that the other good part about working on, while I was cooking my stir fry, I was listening to the last hour of the audiobook of Ta-Nehisi Coates' new book. And I can officially say that I finished it. But I gotta reread that shit. Oh my god! Yeah, I bought the book. I'm buying the book, but I'm more of an audiobook person. But it's, oh my god, it's a powerful message. Okay, I promised myself that I wasn't going to talk about the book because there's a lot of thoughts that I have, and I think I'm gonna reserve it for the another episode. It's gonna the final thought of another episode. So for this one, it's a great book. That's all I'm gonna say. Shut up, podcast. It's putting it on its what do you call it? The recommended list of books to read. Yes, I'm gonna put a stamp on it. Approved by Shut Up Podcast. I guess the books are real. But okay, getting back. I initially wrote in response to there's an interview on CBC Morning, one of those morning shows, and Ta-Nehisi Coates is talking about his book. And this white dude, Tony Doku, like, I didn't see it as an attack at the time, but basically does some white people thing and says, "So why do you hate Rizzo?" That kind of line of basically attacks him. It's an interview. It's in a form of interview, but it, like, asked him some bullshit questions. You know what? No, I take back. No, because on the last episode, I said I wasn't mad at his attack. Okay, I say attack because let me just play a clip by just to make some context here. I'm gonna play a clip of Ta-Nehisi Coates talking to, you know what? I'll just play it and I'll explain where it comes from after.
Then you go on the CBS Morning Show, and Tony DeCoppel, the host, basically vindicates everything you wrote in the book. He engages in every lazy trope on the issue, right to exist, etc.
The content of that section would not be out of place in the backpack of an extremist.
And I walk down a street in Hebron, and a guy says to me, "I can't walk down the street unless I profess my religion." I'm with another path. No. I want to. This is very, very important. He can't ride on certain roads. He can't get water in the same way that Israeli citizens who live less than a mile away from him can.
And why is that?
Why is that okay?
Why is that? Why is there no agency in this book for the Palestinians? They exist in your narrative merely as victims of the Israelis. What is their role in the lack of a Palestinian?
I have a very, 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 very moral compass about this. Mm-hmm. And again, perhaps it's because of my ancestry. Either apartheid is right or it's wrong.
Again, it's very hard for me to analyze that because I was
in it. What were you thinking in that moment?
I was a little surprised, and then I realized what was going on.
What was going on?
I was in a fight. It took me a moment.
Right. I was in a fight. I love that he put that. So, since the last episode, I've been seeing a lot of clips because I did mention it that some people believe that Tony, fuck his name is. Okay, let me back up. This was Ta-Nehisi Coates on, is it ZDO News? But basically he's been interviewed by Mehdi Hasan. And that dude's got a lot of basically when I see his face, I'm expecting good shit to come out of this interview. Anyways, so, a lot of people were criticizing the white dude for his line of questioning. Now, on the last episode, I did say, I'm not mad for what he did. But I am acknowledging what he did was the equivalent of a heckler at a comedy show. And it puts the comedian in a situation where they get to obliterate them, the heckler, right? So, I'm not saying Ta-Nehisi Coates obliterated the guy, but it put him in a position where he could show the world that, hey, asshole, I've researched this shit. I say the world. Most people, most rational thinking individuals will be like, okay, yo, this black guy seems to know what he's talking about. Now, I call him a heckler because most comedians don't like hecklers. It throws them off their game, but it's just that some comedians are just way better at handling them than others. Me personally, I've never enjoyed being heckled. It just freaks you out. But whatever, right? Some people had, so I'm treating Tony Coppola, whatever his name, as a heckler. But the kind of heckler that put the comedian in a position to show, oh, they do this for real. These motherfuckers are professional. I picked the wrong one. And it just had me thinking about the fact that how really what gets my is I didn't pay attention, I guess because I didn't understand it, but with Tony Coppola, whatever his name is, at the beginning where he says, hey man, if it wasn't for your award, I'm paraphrasing here, right? But if it wasn't for your awards, the fact that I knew you're one of the good Negroes, I would have thought this book was written by a fucking extremist. I didn't pay attention to that. Part of it is because I tend to not pay attention to the words of a colonizer. Now, I don't mean that I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be, I'm being accurate. Colonizers. And in a sense that, like that backpack of extreme, in a sense that I grew up with white people. And I am used to speaking to white people who are oblivious of the fact that they benefit from racism, who have a different perspective on racism, who unconscious don't realize it. To them, racism is just that word black people keep bringing up to get on their nerves. But I've always gotten used to, this is my perspective. I'm coming from the perspective of the people who are victims of racism, talking to someone who benefit from racism and are oblivious about it and won't bring it up. So that's what I mean by colonizers. So I guess I'm used to bullshit. But I'm used to them othering me. I'm used to them not treating me, not speaking to me or acknowledging or neglecting my humanity. So I expect bullshit to come out. It's like I'm immune to their bullshit. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is when he came with his line of questioning, it just reinforces that I see the Israeli-Palestinian conflict through the eyes of a colonizer. I see it the same way people who were pro-slavery, during slavery, when slavery was legal, who were pro-status quo, they all were like this Tony, like, oh, you want to end slavery? Why do you want to destroy our country? Like, I've yet to hear a pro-Israeli perspective that didn't deny the humanity of Palestinians. That's what I mean by colonizer. That's what I mean by, it's like this mindset of, it's a mindset that I thought I was able to understand, because I bring up the fact that I grew up with white people, and you would think that I was familiar with that mindset, but it's like, it's my imagination is where I've been, it's been difficult for me to see the world through their eyes, which is, my existence matters, yours doesn't. They'll tell you, no, I don't see it like that. No, I'm familiar with that. No, I love everybody, nigger. You know, I but these savages need to know their place. I am the winner in this story. No, not just I am. Me and everyone who shares the complexion of my skin color are the winners in this story. I remember watching, I don't like that show, but that movie, by the way, Planet of the Apes. And I was watching and I'm like, I bet you that's how white people, watching all these talking apes running around. I'm like, I bet you that's how white people see us. Like talking apes. So I can understand why it would be difficult for them to be like, hey, yeah, we're equal. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, we're equal. I love you. Fuck. I gotta be friends with this beast. Anyways, I'm just saying, and here's the thing. I am not trying to say that Tony, fuck, what's his last name? I keep mispronouncing his last name, but whatever. That dude, that white dude, goes on saying, ha ha, I hate black people. I'm sure he's a kind person. I was going on his Instagram and, you know, for a family pic. Like, he's like a normal human being, but he's infected by this disease of racism. Racism. He can't tell from the perspective of humanity, you're the villain in this story. They were all, like, all these people were, you know, their parents set them up for failure, raised them to, set them up for failure. Look, I'm seeing all the points that I made. Look, all I'm just going to say is, I'm gonna recite is two things I will say about Ta-Nehisi Coates that I enjoyed is, one is how he starts out the book and he's talking to fellow writers. And I'm trying to imagine a future where I share the same message, a similar message that he did to writers, be doing that to podcasters. He says, your role as writers is to save the world. I think it's badass. It's really badass. And the second point is he really does a good job, Ta-Nehisi Coates, as reminding us that, hey, Palestinians are more than just victims. They're human beings. There's like, they're human beings, acknowledging their humanity in there. Now, to other people, to people, you know, the West, they'll see it as, I don't know, we live in this world like, okay, if you're not with us, you're against us. But it's like, it opens your mind to what if a future, what about a solution that allows Jewish people and Palestinians to control their own destiny? Because right now, all we're hearing is, we're the good guys, they're the villains. They need to know their, you know, it's, anyways, okay, look, it's bigger than that. I'm just going to say it's a great book. I think, this book is going to, it's going to be criticized for sure, but it's in the spectrum of history, it's going to be a big deal. A big deal. All right, okay. I can't say more through this, but yeah. The whole point of this whole segment was just to say that I stand by my word of I wasn't mad by what Tony Dokupil, fuck shit, man. That's a, why can't you have an easy Christian name? All right, Dokupil was saying, I'm still not mad at what he did, but mainly because that's what I expect from people like him. There, exactly. I don't, it's thank you for being who you've always been, white boy. That's pretty much how I wanted to say it. All right, okay. All right. Yo, Ta-Nehisi could write. That nigga could write. He helped me understand when I say fuck white at the beginning. He helps me, like, he talks about how part of your role as writers, or I, wait, did it say, but basically, or what he does is helps you clarify the world. And in reading that, like, it's the more I'm finding the words of what I'm trying to articulate when I say fuck whitey. I mean, fuck colonizers, pretty much, but. But yeah, anyways, great book. Okay, let's move on. Okay, this one goes, something Talal Amasi recently said.
Scene on the wire where Marlo's talking to the security guard. He's trying to explain to him the way the world works. And he's like, it don't work the way you think it should work. It works the other way. Like, I had to revisit that the other day when my man Sean William called me up and he was like, how are you going to promote your project for the Grammy? Like, how are you going to let people know that they could vote for it if they're Recording Academy members? And I'm like, but Cash should already know, particularly people in spoken word. I done rented studios in Atlanta, Los Angeles. I done got the freshest producers, picked the dopest tracks, engineer. I done hired session musicians, a saxophonist, a bass player, a keyboardist. Like, I mean, we went all in. We got half of the freshest spoken word artists of this generation on the album. Like, how would people not know that I'm not trying to, like, push the envelope or, like, you know, move the needle in spoken word? And he's like, yo, I understand how you think it should work, but it's not necessarily how it works. And like, Sean William is already a Grammy nominated spoken word artist. So, you know, I know he's right. And he's like, you have to directly tell people that you have a project that they can listen to. And if they like it, they can vote for it. If they're a Recording Academy member, if their friends are Recording Academy members, they can vote for it. You got to let them know directly. And I'm like, yo, but man, I flew my favorite videographer from Atlanta all the way to Newark, New Jersey, just to get footage for the video for Once Again. I mean, we rented out production studios. We got somebody to do AI. We the video to Old Me, we rented out like 4 different sets for that video, man. Like, we rented out a jail for that. Matter of fact, we rented out a horse ranch, like actual horses in a spoken word video, B, actual horses. And he's like, yo, man, I feel you. Sounds like you got it all figured out. Uh-huh. You don't have to tell people. They just going to, like, kind of just already guess that you're trying to go for a Grammy and that they should vote for it. So, you know, you go ahead. My bad. You got it figured out. And I'm like, I know he's right, but in my mind, even to this day, I'm still thinking about all these videos and all that production. And I'm like, yo, in a spoken word video, B, actual horses.
You want it to be one way.
Man, I don't
want it to be one way.
Man, stop. Stop saying that.
What if the other way?
Yo, you know that scene on The Wire where Marlo's talking to the security guard? He's trying to...
All right, I just played the last part just so you can hear from the beginning. All right, so he starts out by saying, yo, you know that scene on The Wire where Marlo's talking to that security guard? And Yo, I think this message touches to the theme of, okay, I get, well, for first of all, I forgot to say that if you work for the Grammys or the people that he's looking for, let me say, if you are, he's got an album out, please feel free to share this, especially with anyone you know who's planning to consider Grammy nomination. The full album is still up for Best Spoken Word Album consideration. The track, once again, has been accepted for the Best American Roots Performance consideration. That means a spoken word track has officially been accepted in the country and roots category. Insane and Blurple have been moved to Best Rap Performance consideration. Okay, I was not aware of this. For your Grammy consideration, Thug Healer 2 for the real one. Look, man, this dude has put in a lot of work, and I hope he gets that Grammy. Even though I'm like, man, who gives a fuck about a goddamn Grammy? But I'm not where he is. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess as an artist, you want to be recognized for your talent, for your skills, and especially all your motherfucking hard work. So, I like how he took a life lesson and presented it in a way, because that's what he usually does, is he learns shit and he shares it, each one teach one. But I like how he made it into a video about, man, I've been working my ass off. I like how he shared a message about how he broke down that scene in The Wire. Let me put it this way, man. You make any reference to The Wire to make your point, you're going to get my ear. You will bend my ear. That's how to get my attention. sorry, I mean to chuckle. I was thinking of the white dude who I knew, and he was the one person I didn't like talking about The Wire with. Motherfucker made into boring. Whatever, man. Anyway, whatever. Sorry, focus. Second is, I love how basically he swallowed a bitter pill. He had reached a point where he was convinced he knew it all. He goes, like, I understand that mindset of, like, the fuck you mean I got to do more work? The fuck you mean I still got to tell people about my project? The fuck you mean? Like, you know, I can relate to, and I love how his wise friend responded with, oh, looks like you got it all figured out. Why the fuck am I talking to you? Ding! Did you see my Grammys? I can relate to that stubbornness. And, yeah, I guess it was a life lesson. And it was a great message, man, overall. I don't know why I'm keep talking like I can add more to what he just said, but great message on his part. All right, next item. All right, okay, so shout out to TikTok creator Professional Sastron, I like that name, a.k.a. your boyfriend's worst nightmare. And she said something that sparked a thought for myself. So let me start with her words, and then I'll continue on afterwards. So,
men think too highly of themselves. They think that anytime a woman wants autonomy over her own life, somehow she wants to be a man. This comment was on a video of me saying that I was going to ask for a raise because men are not afraid to ask. So instead of hating, maybe take a page out of our playbook. Darling, I want to be nothing like you. Let's make that clear. The version of men we have in modern society is nothing that I want to mimic. These men do not know how to be leaders. These men do not know how to take care of themselves. They do not know how to love their partners, and they don't know how to be loving, caring parents. I don't want that book. Y'all want to burn books? Let's burn that book. Anytime a woman wants to reclaim her power back from when men stole it, they want to say that, oh, look, see, we must be doing something right because you want more of what we have. Darling, you have power. You have power you didn't earn, which is why you can't function in society. That's why you're not a loving parent, a loving partner, someone who takes care of yourself, because it's all a fraud. It's fake. And women don't operate like that. You want something done? Ask a woman.
Powerful. Powerful. Yeah, okay. The part in that sentence that got my attention, that sparked me some thinking, was when she said, modern day men today. Like, it has me wondering, have we been getting worse? I know we haven't been getting better, but is it worse or have we remained the same? Now, when she said that, when she was going on, fuck, I don't want to be anything like you men. I connected to that message because I had reached a point in my life, likely in my 40s, where I was like, I want nothing to do with this definition of masculinity. I fuck these guys, man. Fuck. I spent my entire childhood trying to be a real man, only to realize that I don't want it. I don't want it anymore. Why? Because the shit feels like a fucking fraud, man. I was like, I wanted to write into the comment section, but I didn't think I can contribute anything better than what she just said. Like, this was like, the thought that I did have was more for me, in a sense that when I think of, so she lists her list of what makes modern man, today's man, disappointing. For me, the part that really put me, that became the catalyst to fuck it, I'm done with trying to be society's version of a real man. The part that got to me the most, the trait, is how the average man was full of shit. Like, you can find a guy bitching about homosexuals, only later to realize that, oh, wow, he was just repressing his feelings, repressing the fact that he's gay himself. Like, we were all raised to be full of shit. And what really triggered that thinking is this showed up in Political Humor. It goes, House Republican posts image of J.D. Vance altered to make him look chiseled. And it reminded me of the comment that I nearly left for that video, which is men will look in the mirror and see everything but what's actually there. It's like we were all, I remember seeing this caricature of, it was a woman looking in the mirror and she sees something that's worse. When a man looks in the mirror, he sees something that's greater than what's up there. Like, he sees buff man. He sees, I'm the man. Every reason to believe that he's the man. I got bitches. I got money. You know what I mean? It's like I never related to that. I mean, I tried to, but, I'm not going to lie to you. I was not able to do whatever, basically fake it till you make it. Look in the mirror and say, and look at the person in the mirror and say, you're the man. People bow down. Like, all the affirmations in the world did not help. And, I was really big on studying my inner world, the emotions. Like, I know I do XYZ, but I was always curious as to why I did XYZ. And then from there, learning the values, the importance, the significance, like, unlike the average man, I learned not to dismiss your feelings. It's like, if you feel one way, it's, you should analyze that shit. I learned things like that. Why going to therapy? See, I grew up around men who the only emotions they would share is anger, and the only therapy sessions was, you know, through a bottle of alcohol, and it was only for liquor. That's when the real self came out. It's like, nigger, you know what I mean? It's I love you, man. They pick fights. It's like I hated that part of masculinity. It's the no investigation into who you really are. Nah. You stuck to the image of you make up an image and you believe in that, even though believing who you are. Now, I'm not trying to say that it's unique to men, but I am talking about my gripes, my gripes that led me to escape this cult called masculinity. It was that part. I remember, let me bring up to my second point. Her message also reminded me of how I've been spending a lot of time in women's spaces. Not to take up spaces, but I was like, see, women have, network for themselves, like empowering shit. They know how the values of the significance. I'm lack of a better word. I wish I was Ta-Nehisi Coates, but the power of emotions. See, we were all taught to, as boys, to deny your emotions. Fuck it. You know what I mean? You're scared? Act brave. You want to cry? Suck that shit up. You want to you angry? Let it out. Let it out. Unless you're on parole or some shit like that. But you're happy? Keep it to yourself. You're happy to see me? Fuck that. What are you, gay? Don't do anything shit like that. Wait, I know we've been friends for life, but I don't want to hear that shit. It bothered me. Like, I was, again, because, you know, highly sensitive person. I feel shit. But growing up as a man, as a boy, I kept trying to repress that shit. And it was dangerous. You know, I think I kind of resent the fact that I had no role models to help me understand to help me walk through my own inner world. That's where the resentment comes from. And another thing about being in this masculine world is being shitty to other human beings. I hated that. You know, I thought it was bullshit. Yeah, so like I was saying, been spending a lot of times in women's space learning. On my first episode of this podcast, first episode of the new edition, New Testament version of Shut Up Podcast, the Manifesto episode, I talked about how you're really going to forget. I talked about how hold on a second. Just lost my train of thoughts. First episode, I talked about how, oh, right, how part of what inspired me podcasting is because, it's just because I was tired of silencing myself. And part of silencing myself came from being surrounded by people who, the way I would describe it, is either didn't understand the question, or if they did understand the question, couldn't give me any answers. So I always felt like trapped. I always felt like everything I had to say was inappropriate. The few times in life where I was able to, like Ta-Nehisi Coates, found clarification for myself is in women's spaces. Yeah, it's hard to admit, you know what I mean? So, you're a bitch? No, I mean, it's women's spaces. They had a lot to explain about the world. They had explanations, answers to the world that I needed to hear. Just like the same way for, think all these people that we repress, whether they're gay, whether they're, whatever, they have things to teach us about our world we can gain from. So that's what I mean when I said that I used to spend a lot of time in women's spaces, because there were answers. I was able to find answers that I was looking for. I'm sure they had some answers that, you know, some men can understand, but I mean, or probably had, but no one wanted to admit that. Well, okay, I did not hang out with the kind of men who were courageous enough to, like, think outside of the tribe of masculinity. I'll just leave it like that. Okay. Yeah, that's it. All right, okay. Last point. And this one is, I've labeled this one under the title of Stay Away From Anyone Who Acts. Dear young people, to young people listening to this podcast, stay away from anyone who acts like they have all the answers. I'm telling you now, they're full of shit. The average individual, especially adults, are full of shit. We've all learned, when we become adults, we all learn how to put on a mask, how to put on a good impression, how to convince you that we got our shit together, that we're normal. And we don't. And this next clip helped me understand that or clarify that for myself. Damn, it's Instagram. Hold on a second. Here he goes. Question goes, What are we supposed to be doing?
I'm 23 now. If you 40 plus, I got a question for you. What the hell are we supposed to be doing?
What are we supposed to be doing? Let me let you in on a little secret. Nobody, and I do mean nobody, knows what they're doing. Ever. I'm 51 and I've been making it up as I go, with a cup of coffee in one hand and a questionable life choice in the other. Society has sold us the fairy tale that by the time you hit a certain age, you're supposed to somehow have your shit together. Little white picket fence, 2.5 kids, a dog, a retirement plan that doesn't involve a lottery ticket. Spoiler alert. It's all bullshit. We're all just winging that shit every single day. There's no rule book, there's no cheat codes, and the yardstick that everybody's trying to measure up to is about as imaginary as my desire to go to the gym. Age does not somehow magically bestow wisdom upon you. All it does is give you creaky joints and a high tolerance for stupid shit. Everybody's just stumbling around in the dark, pretending that they have a clue, hoping nobody notices that they're just as lost as everybody else. So here's my sage advice. Stop stressing about what you're supposed to be doing. Make it up as you go. Take risks, make mistakes, and for fuck's sakes, laugh at yourself as often as you can. Do what makes you happy. Don't sweat the small stuff, or the big stuff for that matter. And most importantly, just keep fucking moving. Life is too short to play by rules that don't actually exist. But hey, if you ever find the cheat codes, be a sweetheart and share them, will ya?
All right, the content creator's name is The Real... That's a cool... The Real Slim Sherry. Very cool. Yes, links are in the show notes. I really appreciated her message because she's right. I'm, what, 49 right now? And there was a time in my life where I was convinced the world had their shit together except for me. And now I'm realizing that when I look at my friends, man, yeah, I have friends who have passed away. I'm shocked who were gym nuts, who have passed away before. I have friends who I was convinced, I ended up being surprised that I lived longer than them. Well, my fat ass lived longer than them. Stop doing that, B. Stop being mean to yourself. Right. My point is, no one has the answer, especially motherfucking Christians. Sorry. I'm taking it out on Christians because everyone in my circle had been convinced that yes, their interpretation of the Bible and God's words were superior to yours and you listen. Basically, a lot of narcissists. But she's right. I have friends going through divorces. I have friends in marriages questioning their marriage. Like, fuck, what was I thinking? No one has the answer. You know what we all have in common? A whole bunch of us have said, yo, this whole adult life sucks. See, I think the boomers had us convinced that once you're, you know what? That's not true. I think the internet has made it more obvious that, yeah, anyone who acts like they got their superior, like the Donald Trump mindset of I can fix it all, it's a bullshit, man. That dude is winging it. Don't put anyone on a pedestal. I know I should preach to myself about that one. But, yeah, don't put anyone on a pedestal. No one has all the answers. Aren't you acting like you got all the answers? No, I'm telling you that, yo, fuck, you will meet a series of people who will let you down, who will disappoint you, who you were convinced had all the answers. This is why I'm not a big fan of coaches. Therapists, okay, but life coaches? Me personally, I'm not, if you have a life coach and it's working out for you, if you're seeing progress in your life, good for you. It's like finding a teacher that just brings it out of you. Sometimes it's another human being that can, I do believe there are human beings that can help you get to the next level. Okay, you know what? I am acknowledging that. Yes, I am. I will go that far. But they do not have all the answers and they don't deserve being put on a pedestal. Now, it's kind of interesting coming from me because I struggle with putting people, making the mistake of putting all the wrong people on the pedestal. But whatever. But anyways, shout out to the Real Slim Sherry for sharing that word, man. That was powerful. Over 50. I thought it was just me. All right, gang. Let me wrap this up and jump to the final thoughts, okay? Okay, because we cool. All right, and we are good on time. All right, and plus this joint is calling my name. Okay, all right. Let's do this. Did I mention I made a stir fry earlier? Yay! All right, okay, let me just go through my... Okay, what's up with today's title? You know what? That rap verse that I recited earlier, it's from a song by 50 Cent that I don't even like. And the only reason I kept it is for that one line. Hold on. First, the title of the song is I'm a Hustler. Shout out to you, 50 Cent fan, who are out there and offended by... What do you mean you don't like 50 Cent? I'm a Hustler. DJ Scratch produced it? Anyways, yeah. I just was looking for the line. I was trying to be funny when I went with, yo, bitch, sexy me, take me to ecstasy. Once I nut, oh shit, I don't want him next to me. Fuck it, that's 50 Cent. The line that I wanted was, if it's on, motherfucker, believe me, I'm going to ride. I'm the type to swallow blood before I swallow my pride. And the real mess, honestly, okay, I'll be honest with you, right? There are no rap songs about swallowing your pride, about admitting that you're wrong. If there is one, let me know. I don't even think there's a song. But I think the point of today's title, the message is, when you make their point, when you prove their point. When you ever been in a situation where you caught yourself, pretty much you make your argument and the other person is looking at you and say, you're pretty much saying what you wanted me to say. But instead of being defensive, you acknowledge the fact that, you know what? Ever been in a point in your life where you're like, I'm wrong, you were right? That's really what I'm trying to talk about. Because getting to that point, you got to swallow your motherfucking pride. Now, here's what's funny. That's not really what I want to talk about, but I'm only bringing this up because I want to I'm only bringing this up because I had a moment in therapy that I want to share with me that I thought it was really comical. The gods were fucking with me, right? And I'll go into details. First, it started out, the sessions begins with how my manager at work had written something positive about me. Not like a love letter, but basically praising my skills to upper management, to, you know, whatever. It was a document he needed to write to, it was kind of like a recommendation letter. Think of it like that, right? And the praises made me feel fucking uncomfortable. So I sent it to my therapist and saying, it bothered me. And we pretty much, because we've been here before, and essentially what I ended up realizing is I have difficulty accepting compliments, taking in compliments. Fast forward to the session, later, I'm explaining to her about I talked about this person on a previous episode, about a coworker who's leaving our team. And he's the guy I was hating on. And when I called the coworker to congratulate him, I told him that, how, hey, yo, we're losing a star player. And we're losing a star player. Basically, I wanted him to know that I valued the work that he's done for us. Of course, I have to put it in a joke. I can't use words like, I value your work, young man. No, I said, yo, we're losing our Gretzky. And he was all like, Flaz goes, oh, come on, man. There's other people who are better, who are just as good on the team. And then I'm like, dude, take the fucking compliment. Don't make this weird. You know, we men don't talk emotions. It's bad enough. I'm feeling gay right now. So I'm like, take the fucking compliment. So I shared this story with my therapist. And that look, the smile on her face. I want to say it's not a smirk, but the smile on her face. I'm going to use the words. I think it's a smirk. Because someone's disrespectful, but it was like, really, nigga? Really, nigga? It's funny because I realized what the fuck she was smiling at. Because I started the session talking about my inability to accept compliments, while also realizing I have an obsession with giving people compliments. because I grew up, you know, never been like you know, with parents who didn't believe in what's that word? Reinforcement, positive reinforcement, or shit like that. They were good too. Hey, you fucked up. Oh, you did good, but you could have done better. You know, like that kind. And I don't blame the parents, you know, because they grew up with that mentality. They didn't know any better. But that was what I was familiar with. There was never any compliments. So as a result, I was like, I'm giving out compliments to people that I feel would, because I can sense when someone goes, okay, you know, it would help them. Or I can sense when sometimes it goods and sometimes it makes people feel uncomfortable. But it's funny how I started out with compliments make me feel uncomfortable. And then I'm explaining to her how this motherfucker wouldn't take a compliment from me. And that smile on her face was like, oh my God. Shit made me laugh, man. And that's really one. Okay, so that's really what I focus on. I wrote that. It's like my inability to handle compliment versus my obsession with giving people compliments. Before I make that point is, I was really convinced with, because at the beginning, because usually this is our session goes between me and her, and I'll be like, yeah, compliments don't make it. Like, it's like I'm a glutton for punishment. I deserve punishment. I don't deserve anything good. I'm only comfortable with this. Like, there's a part of my operating system in my mind that's like, reject all compliments. It's a scam. You want to make me feel uncomfortable? Start praising me. Then I'll be like, yeah, what the fuck you want? What do you want? Huh? You want some money? Huh? I ain't going to give you this dick for free. It's yeah. I'm like, what's going on? What are we talking about here? What are you doing? But my point is how she'll be, because that's, you learn in therapy, you know, it's like essentially question that thought. Why? But it's one of those rare moments that I'm like, no. I don't know what it is in my mind that causes me to reject compliments, but it feels normal and I'm not going to let you talk me into, like I was kind of, I can't explain it to you, but essentially it felt like a truth for me. Like I was convinced that I was not meant to accept compliment. I'm oversimplifying, but this is how it felt. And I remember feeling convinced, excuse me, not again, convinced that I don't deserve, I shouldn't accept any compliments. And then when you flip it to me giving people compliments, I'm like, the same way I would want someone to, like, I'm not bullshitting you. I'm like, the same way I would want you to receive a compliment with sincerity. I'm not trying to gas you up, but if I tell you, hey, that shit you did really helped me out. Thank you very much. I want you to hear that. Ooh, je soif. I'm gonna pretend that I posted the picture, because okay, before I record, I always take a picture of my desk. It's my way of keeping. No, whatever. I take a picture of my desk before recording, and in this picture, assuming that I posted the picture, there's a book. You'll notice a book called "The Greatest Salesman in the World." And I won't go into details. Greatest Salesman is supposed to be a motivational book. And it's meant to, part of what makes you, it's supposed to be a motivational book to help, you know, get you to the next level. And one of the things they're trying to get you is to, like, forming good habits. That's like the crust of the book, getting you to form good habits. And in order to do that, there are like 10 scrolls within this book where you have to reread to yourself, kind of like affirmations. And these 10 scrolls consist of 10 different habits that you need to enforce for yourself, right? The first one, the first scroll is, you know, how you need to form good habits. And the second one is, you finally get into habit, is, I will greet this day with love in my heart. This is what's interesting, right? I'm giving you a long, this is a setup, but bear with me. And shout out to people who are familiar with my podcast and my storytelling abilities to know how I do things, okay? Just saying. It's my dentist appointment. That whistling sounds because of my teeth. All right, okay. There's a part that I need to read. He goes, I will greet this day with love in my heart, for this is the greatest secret of success of all ventures. Muscles can split shields and even destroy life, but only unseen power of love can open hearts of men. It's sexist. Of men. And until I master this art, I will remain no more than a peddler of the marketplace. Okay, but I will get to the paragraph where really he goes, by reason, okay, there was trust. I will greet this day with love by heart, and I will do this head for. Okay, this is the part that where I got the habit of giving people compliments. Even more, but like praising them. Praising them whenever they do something good. Right? This paragraph, he goes, I will greet this day with love in my heart. And how will I do this? Henceforth will I look on all things with love, and I will be born again. I will love the sun for it warms my bones, yet I will love the rain for it cleanses my spirits. I will love the spirit. Okay, no, that's not the paragraph. It goes, hold on a second. Okay, there we go. I will greet this day with love in my heart. And how will I speak? I will laud my enemies, and they will become friends. I will encourage my friends, and they will become brothers. Always will I dig for reasons to applaud. Never will I scratch for excuse to gossip. When I am tempted to criticize, I will bite my tongue. When I am moved to praise, I will shout from the roof. Is it not so that birds and the winds and the sea, all nature speak with the music of praise for their creator? Can I not speak with the same music to his children? Henceforth, I will remember this secret, and it will change my life. Okay, my point is, okay. There's a part where he says it's easy to criticize people. Yeah, it's easy to criticize people. When you just notice that in yourself or in other people, they always bring up how, oh, this person sucks. It's very common for me. I don't know about your circle of associates, but it's very common for me. Like, I work in the service industry. Well, I mean, not a waiter, but the IT service industry. And fuck, my colleagues spend a lot of time. I mean, I join in every once in a while, but bitching about the client. Yeah, can you believe this fucking client? They want shit from us. Yeah, service. Reminds me when I used to work at McDonald's and we would have rush and we're angry at the people coming in. I'm like, fuck, but if they don't come in, we don't have a job. My point is, you're there to serve. I mean, not suck their dick, but I'm just saying you're there to serve. That's the job. And you're angry at the clients. Yeah, sometimes some clients will be shitty and sometimes they'll be great. But it doesn't change the fact that they're the client. You got to deal with them. And we spend a lot of time bitching about the clients. Sometimes I feel like we're like the cops and who are like treating the communities like the enemy. Fuck it, yeah, man. These fucking citizens don't fucking understand how dangerous it is to be a cop. You're sucking our dick and whatever. Sure, I beat my wife, but I'm a cop. I'm allowed to do that. No, yeah. Oh my God, I'm getting distracted. It's very easy. It's an easy tendency to be negative. And I remember reading that chapter and noticing that it's like, okay, I'm going to be better than everyone else. I'm going to force myself, instead of jumping into criticism, jumping into reasons. I had to look up the word laud, L-A-U-A-D. L-A-U-A-D. It means praise. And that's where I picked up, go figure. That's where if you see me, you'll notice that, oh man, he's got a kind thing to say. It's just a trait. I hang out with people and I find something positive about you. And it's not because I'm trying to kiss your ass, but it's like, you know what? It used to feel like, I used to believe it was my Christian, back in the days when I was a somewhat practicing Christian, I used to think it was part of my duty to like point out what you're doing great, especially in a world where most of us spend our time feeling shitty about ourselves. I feel like I was giving you a leg up. I was helping out. But what's amazing about this shit is how, this habit is how I never did it for myself. It never occurred to me, wow, oh my God, I'm doing some self-therapy right now. It never occurred to me that the other negativity that I need to stop focusing on is my own. Because I spend a lot, it's amazing. I'm just having a realization, moment. I've been so focused on not being negative towards other people, it never occurred to me that I should do return that favor. See, what you don't get is, okay, I guess what's hard for me to explain is how convinced I wasn't doing anything wrong by rejecting compliments, by being mean to myself, by saying nasty things to myself. It just, like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm not hurting anyone. Hurting myself, I'm not crying, so it doesn't make me want to feel like I'm not seeing any blood or whatever. I didn't see it as a, shout out to a friend of mine who caught me being mean to myself, just saying, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm so this or whatever. And she was like, hey, stop that shit. And I felt like a man committing domestic violence towards myself. And I was like, mind your own business, bitch. Be black, make me do this, all right? He needs a fresh one. I got to give him a fresh one. I got to put him in line. Anyway, you know, the title episode should be more about my inability to accept compliments or be positive or say something nice about myself. But instead, I'm going with that moment where I understood, I realized a point that my therapist was trying to get me to understand. And the way I realized it is by walking into it myself. Like, I was like flooded with logic. I was like surrounded by logic. I was like, oh, you can't escape this. It's amazing when you have like a belief that you can't let go. Well, in that moment, I found myself letting go of it for a brief moment. I laughed while I let it go while she was smirking at me. The title of today's episode nearly turned to her, that smirk on her face. But smirk kind of sounds condescending. I mean, or whatever, kind of disrespectful. But yeah, no, that's really it. That's really that moment where I made her point for her. And this concludes today's episode, boys and girls. All right, not bad. Hey, did I mention I made stir fry? Yay! Wow, what a day of accomplishment, man. I finished Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, The Message. Like, I wasn't going to finish it, but I finished it. And I recorded I'm wrapping up episode 209, and that's for the books. All right, 210, wow. Man, we come a mighty long way. By we, I mean I've come a mighty long way. And yeah, okay, thank you for listening. As always, if you want to holler at me, the email address for this podcast is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. What's that? Why aren't I promoting the website? Because the website is going through a bit of construction. I mean, it's still there, shutuppodcast.com, but it's not as sexy as I wanted it to be. But I'm working on it. Okay, with that said, thank you for listening, as always, from the bottom of my heart to another amazing episode of Shut Up Podcast. And as always, please remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. All right, peace.